The Colts in session. The Colts in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. Here it is, July 30th, Tuesday, 2013. In the court-martial proceedings against Private First Class Bradley Manning at Fort Meade, Maryland, the judge, Colonel Denise Lind, has revealed her verdicts, and there is one pleasant surprise. Hey boy, take off that hat. Where do you think you're at? I know where you gon' be if you don't need my plea. I'm here to tell you. And the pleasant surprise is that Judge Lind, Colonel Lind, led the reading of the verdicts with an important finding of not guilty. That is in the charge of aiding the enemy. That carried the life prison sentence without parole. And she found him not guilty on that count. And that is critical. She also, on a technical issue, found him not guilty on a second count related to a video from Afghanistan. And frankly, the charge made by the government was inaccurate. And so she found him not guilty there. But in all other cases, all the other charges, she made a finding of guilty. And attorneys suggest that this could lead to a maximum sentence for Manning of 136 years. So this is a bit anticlimactic, of course, because Manning pled guilty back in February when he made a lengthy statement to the court. He pled guilty to 10 minor charges out of the roughly 21 that were presented by the government. And the defense team thought that at that point the government might declare victory and drop the rest of the charges. But the Obama administration, we heard the president at the fundraiser here in San Francisco 2 years ago, they flatly believe he broke the law. And so we couldn't lose face by dismissing the additional charges. So, given the whole chemistry of the process, there's a little bit of justice for Bradley Manning today. And as we have been discussing with Kevin Gostola, who's been live blogging the trial for FireDogLake.com, the real critical part of this trial starts tomorrow. The hearings related to the sentencing on these convictions. Each side is expected to call at least 20 witnesses. This could take a week or two. And I think that we're going to find out why the judge decided that it was not proven that Manning had aided the enemy. And all of this is about the motivation of Manning, and whether or not the court finds that there is middle ground between whistleblowing and espionage. Because a number of counts under the Espionage Act were sustained by this court-martial. And so we will continue to follow the proceedings. And today, we caught up with Colonel Morris Davis, one of my personal heroes. He was the lead prosecutor at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, when he resigned to protest the kangaroo court nature of those proceedings. And Colonel Davis himself testified on behalf of the defense at the Bradley Manning court-martial. Here's what Colonel Davis had to say about today's verdicts.
Well, it was a pleasant surprise. I had hoped that Judge Lind was going to grant a defense motion last week to dismiss the aiding the enemy charge. And I guess it shows why I'm not a betting man, because after she denied the defense motion, I would have bet she would have found him guilty of the charge. So I'd say today was a pleasant surprise. I mean, I think had the government been smart, and rarely is the government smart, but if Private Manning pled guilty to about half the charges, and was subject to, I believe, about a 20-year sentence on the charges that he pled guilty to. Which, in my argument, I mean, there seem to be two camps on Bradley Manning. There's the one camp that says, you know, he got to get a medal and a ticker tape parade, and another camp that says he got to be, you know, escorted before a firing squad. I don't fall into either one. He and I and Edward Snowden and many others signed the same security paperwork swearing we wouldn't disclose classified information. So I don't think he gets a free pass. And he pled guilty, you know, to the offenses that I think accurately reflect what he did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the government, had they accepted his pleas to those charges and dismissed the others, he would have been looking at a 20-year maximum sentence and would have waived his appeals. Instead, they bought dragging this case out, a black eye for the government on losing the hating the enemy charge, and I guarantee there's going to be another 3 to 5 years as this case winds its way through the appellate system.
The full interview with Colonel Morris Davis leads our in-depth interview podcast, released to subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. Segment two is an interview with Lori Wallach at Public Citizen, the watchdog group in Washington, D.C., pulling back the curtain on the super-secret Trans-Pacific Partnership trade negotiations that continue to occur out of sight and out of view of all but the corporate lobbyists who are there promoting their interests. That's available for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. And there are several ways now that you can support my efforts here, and I do need your help. Chloe's piping up right now because she agrees. She would like to see you subscribe to our program. And you can do that. Just visit peterbcollins.com. And under my picture in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, you follow the links to sign up for a new subscription. $1 for a 24-hour pass, $5 a month, cancel anytime. $50 a year is our best deal. And for new subscribers, I've still got some of that great-smelling Kona coffee beans, courtesy of Russ in Hawaii. And I can include those for new annual subscribers. You also qualify for the Sibel Edmonds bonus book. So don't delay. While I've still got the coffee in the books, act now, and you can support me in that manner. You can also support the Peter B. Collins Show by doing business with GoDaddy.com. We have a special arrangement now, and if you buy web hosting services or a domain name registration or any of the other offerings from GoDaddy.com, well, we get a little commission. It's as simple as that. Right now, you can sign up for web hosting with unlimited storage and bandwidth starting at $1.99 a month and get your domain name free. To get a special deal that also supports this program, follow the GoDaddy link in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. Some interesting reaction to the Manning verdict from the people who I admire at the Center for Constitutional Rights. They issued a statement today. And it says, while the aiding the enemy charges, on which Manning was rightly acquitted, received the most attention from the mainstream media, the Espionage Act itself is a discredited relic of the World War I era, created as a tool to suppress political dissent and anti-war activism, and it is outrageous that the government chose to invoke it in the first place against Manning. Government employees who blow the whistle on war crimes, other abuses, and government incompetence should be protected under the First Amendment. We now live in a country where someone who exposes war crimes can be sentenced to life, even if not found guilty of aiding the enemy, while those responsible for the war crimes remain free. If the government equates being a whistleblower with espionage or aiding the enemy, what is the future of journalism in this country? What is the future of the First Amendment? Well, keep those thoughts in mind as I share with you this next story. And I want to credit a great journalist, Jonathan Landay, who writes for the McClatchy Washington Bureau. He broke a story over this past weekend based on exclusive interviews with Sabrina D'Souza. She is a new whistleblower, and she is quivering in her proverbial boots about what the government might do to her. Now, what's interesting is that she is a former CIA undercover operative who served in Italy at the time that the U.S. kidnapped Abu Omar from the streets of Milan. And she has blown the whistle after exhausting every internal mechanism available to her. Now, she's one of the 23 people who's been convicted by Italian authorities in absentia for this illegal operation. And by the way, it was one of the biggest bungled operations of the CIA in recent years that we know about. There could be worse ones that they've managed to keep out of view. But we've covered this story in great detail. The kidnapping in Milan double-crossed Italian authorities who had been surveilling Abu Omar. And what we learned from D'Souza is even more incriminating against our CIA. Because what she alleges, and I think she knows what she's talking about, is that the Milan mission station chief, not mission, he's a station chief, Robert Lady. This is the guy who popped up in the news recently because he was captured or at least detained by authorities in Panama based on the warrant that has been issued for Lady's arrest from Italy. Panama, probably responding to U.S. Requests, didn't send Robert Lady to Italy to face the music. That's what they want the world to do with Ed Snowden, right? But no, in this case, we make an exception because this is one of our spooks. Lady was allowed to return to the United States, and we haven't heard anything of him since. But it was Bob Lady and his boss in Rome who decided they needed to get a rendition, a kidnapping, under their belts because it would be good for their careers. They double-crossed the Italians. They lied to their bosses at Langley and said that, wink, wink, nod, nod, the Italians are on board with this. It's okay. They provided a tacit sort of approval. That was a lie. The Italians had said, this is an illegal operation, and you cannot proceed unless the magistrates approved it. And so this is double-crossing the Italians, double-crossing the leadership at Langley, and this woman, Sabrina D'Souza, has been left under the bus to be run over repeatedly. She has resigned from the CIA. She lost her pension. The government has refused to give her, at least retroactively, immunity as a diplomat, which she says she deserved because she actually served in Rome under diplomatic cover and was only sent to Milan to spell somebody who needed some time off. And so it is a fascinating story. And I've asked Jonathan Landay if he'll put me in touch with Sabrina D'Souza. And if he will, I'll bring you an in-depth interview and let you hear her tell the story herself. In other news, I want to warn you, Barack Obama is once again negotiating with himself in public. He's talking about a grand bargain. Now, remember the last time he talked grand bargain? It was to trade my future Social Security benefit increases for some dubious claims of deficit reduction. Now he's got a grand bargain for the middle class, so grab your wallet, particularly if you're a member of that shrinking middle class. Obama went to a photo op at Amazon's facility in southeast Tennessee. Amazon timed it just right. They announced they're hiring, I think, 5,000 new people across the country. Amazon has also started a price war with publishers that's going to be brutal. But that's a story for another day. So, Obama now announces he wants to cut the corporate tax rate of 35% down to 28% and give manufacturers a preferred rate of 25%. He also wants a minimum tax on foreign earnings as a tool against corporate tax evasion and the use of tax havens. Now, that last part, I fully support. But there's no way he's going to get it out of this Congress. And once again, he's out there floating these ideas, and there is no deal to be cut. It's just crazy. And what infuriates me is cutting the corporate tax rate by 7 points will not produce any new revenue to the Treasury because these corporations don't pay taxes anyway. They skate, they scam, they go offshore. Apple is the prime example of this. And so a minimum tax on foreign earnings is an interesting concept, but it's dead in the water. And meanwhile, the things he wants to trade off for it, the Republicans will grab and never cut a deal with him. So once again, I can only shake my head. My head, I only have one. And say, Mr. President, what on earth are you thinking? Then we turn to the bozos in the United States Senate, who rubber-stamped the confirmation of James Comey as FBI director yesterday, 93-1. The one, Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky. And he's not a complete hero to me, but hey, I give him credit for standing up on this one. This is the kind of confirmation that we will regret sometime in the next 10 years. And since there's only one opponent, every Democratic senator, even the ones you and I might admire, they will owe us an explanation for why they let James Comey, a Republican, a guy who was knee-deep, and his knees are higher than the rest of us, he's about 6'8 or something, but he was knee-deep in all the black ops of the Bush administration, the John U. torture memos, the rendition that we just talked about, the rationale for the expansion of NSA wiretapping, so many other bad things that James Comey has his fingerprints all over. They held one love fest confirmation hearing. They beat him up a little bit about the torture memos and allowed him to say that he opposes waterboarding, which is, I hope, never been an FBI tactic. And it's really sad to me because so many of the problems, the real serious problems, like the Citizens United decision from the Supreme Court, can be traced to the wimpy confirmation votes of Democrats. They could have blocked the confirmation of Sam Alito and John Roberts if they wanted to, but they didn't want to. And here, once again, Obama trots out a bad Republican, and every Democrat lines up to vote for him. And I tried, if you're a regular listener, you know I tried to raise questions about James Comey's fitness for this position. But once again, hardly anybody is listening. Now, Obama wants a grand bargain for the middle class. Why doesn't he line up in support of the people who are putting their lives on the line to strike against McDonald's? These are minimum wage employees. Many make $7.25 an hour. They have no union protection. And just in full disclosure, these strikes are in some ways being promoted by the Service Employees International Union, which may be guaranteeing these people a payment if they get fired or something like that. I don't know all the details. But since last November, we have seen fast food workers striking. Now in 6 cities. It started in New York, and there's another one back on in New York right now. Kansas City, St. Louis, Detroit, Chicago, Milwaukee, Flint, Michigan. And I just want to encourage you, I don't actually patronize fast food joints. It's not like I'm a dietary extremist. I don't care for that stuff. But if you do, I encourage you to boycott any place where you see fast food workers on strike. And maybe even go across the street and patronize another bad employer. Because it's that kind of thing that will make McDonald's pay attention. And I would like to see unionized fast food workers. Can they get $15 an hour? It'll take quite a bit to fight for that. But I support living wage laws, and I certainly support the aspirations that we're seeing here. North Carolina is going back to the Pleasantville days. The new dark ages have arrived in the Tar Heel State as Governor Pat McCrory signed a number of really, really bad bills into law in the past couple of days. And it's interesting because I printed out an article from the Charlotte Observer here, which doesn't even mention the draconian voter suppression laws that the governor signed, and he didn't even know the elements of the bill he signed. He confessed that to reporters 5 minutes after he signed it. It ends some early voting, cuts Sunday voting. It ends a program that pre-registered high school graduates to vote. And, of course, there is that ever-present photo ID requirement that will disenfranchise up to 300,000 voters in North Carolina. And they get out there with their spin doctors and they talk about how this is common sense legislation. Well, the most draconian bill was an anti-abortion law that he signed yesterday. And this anti-abortion bill was, until about a week ago, a bill about motorcycle safety. And this is very common in state legislatures. I don't know if you're familiar with the term gut and amend. But you'll have a bill that started out in January or February of this year. It went through committees. It got voted out of the committees, went to the floor, got passed on the floor. And then it sits there. And at the very last minute, the leaders of the legislature, in this case, once again, Republicans, they delete all the language about motorcycle safety and plug in these draconian anti-abortion laws that mirror what we've seen in Texas and Wisconsin and elsewhere. They create new barriers that cause clinics to close. They impose an unconstitutional limit at 20 or 22 weeks on the right to choose an abortion. And then they crow about how this is for the safety of women and fetuses. Now, I don't know if you saw the bill signing in Ohio of John Kasich. They rammed it through as a budget bill because budget bills can't be put on the ballot for a referenda in Ohio. And in the photo op, there was only one woman present when John Kasich signed it. It's generally conservative white males who are rolling back the rights of women. And fortunately, they have a series of protests that have been going on in North Carolina for, I think, 11 weeks now, called Immoral Mondays. Later this week, we're going to talk with a professor from Wake Forest about this rising protest movement in North Carolina and see if it offers any lessons for the rest of the country. Again, I criticize the Democratic Party. It is not coming to fight these battles about abortion rights right now. And that is a major, major mistake, both morally and politically. A couple of quick bits internationally. They convened talks in Washington on Monday night between representatives of Israel and the Palestinian Authority. And last week, I asked Chaz Freeman about John Kerry's efforts to restart these peace talks. Chaz Freeman, a longtime State Department official, a former Undersecretary of Defense, a guy who knows the Middle East very well. And his comment to me was, well, so far these are talks about talks. And it's interesting because in my local paper, the San Francisco Chronicle today, the story about these talks that have just been revived is headlined, Israel, Palestinians to talk about peace talks. Well, Chaz Freeman had it right. And while online and with my Facebook friends, I've seen some negative reaction to the appointment of Martin Indyk as the leader of these negotiations, the special envoy, I think that's his title. I recapped for you yesterday that Indyk is a former AIPAC employee. He was twice the U.S. ambassador to Israel. And he's the wrong person to be operating as any kind of a broker of these talks. And I frankly think that's the poison pill element that will cause them to fail. I hope I'm wrong, but that's how it looks right here, right now. Just west of Israel in Egypt, the bloodshed continues as the generals who conducted the coup that the U.S. refuses to call a coup have reconstituted the dreaded Mukhabarat, the secret police. And the top diplomat from the European Union, Catherine Ashton, has made her second visit to Cairo since the coup that isn't a coup, is pleading with the generals to find a way to include the Muslim Brotherhood in the new political lineup. But the Brotherhood isn't playing ball, and, of course, their leader, Morsi, is out of sight, locked up, with an uncertain future. And meanwhile, in Iraq, the country that we invaded, blew up the fragile sectarian balance between Sunni, Shia, and Kurd. The violence continues. In July, the month isn't even over, 680 civilians have been killed in various suicide bombings and other violent acts. That's what's going to happen in Afghanistan, too. Prepare yourself for that. And finally today, I've seen a lot of buzz over the last few days about the announcement from Cumulus Media, the second largest radio station owner in the country, that Cumulus has announced it's going to drop the Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity programs from its stations at the end of the year. There are about 40 markets where Cumulus runs right-wing talk stations and has the rights to broadcast Limbaugh and or Hannity. And while my friend Sue Wilson, who's helped lead the boycott of Rush Limbaugh following his misogynist remarks about Sandra Fluck, that boycott has had an impact. But I don't believe it's the reason or the only reason that Cumulus is making this move. Because the Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity programs are owned by Premier, which is a unit of Clear Channel, which is the biggest competitor of Cumulus. And the Dickey boys who run Cumulus have been asking themselves, well, why are we making money for the other guys? So they've got Geraldo Rivera they want to roll out nationally. They have Mike Huckabee doing a pretty lame right-wing talk show, and he's on in a number of markets. And their move is to take their cheaper talent and plug it in, because Hannity and Limbaugh do cost the stations a lot of money. And so I do believe that the boycott has had some of its desired effect. But my sense is, and I have worked in the past for Cumulus, I don't appear to work for them anymore, but my sense is that they're crunching numbers. And perhaps they say, well, on the revenue side, these boycotts have hurt Limbaugh in particular, Hannity secondarily. And so there's a drag on their performance. But as many in the industry have speculated, this just could be a bargaining position. And Clear Channel bought an AM station of 50,000 watt in New York last year as their backup in case Cumulus bumps Limbaugh from WABC. So we'll continue to watch this. I do encourage people to support the boycott of Limbaugh in particular. And I look forward to the day when old Rusty announces his retirement. It cannot come too soon. Thanks for joining me today for this news and comment update. You are free to share this far and wide, and I hope you will. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.